Ezra chapter 4 tonight. I've entitled the message, Prepare for Opposition. Prepare for Opposition. The temple building began in 535 B.C. Now let's just take a look at our little map here. Alright, so they started to build the temple. This is 536. It was when they left, they came down. So it was about 535 when they started building the temple. And then we're going to see in chapter 4 here, there was opposition. And they ended up stopping after they got the foundation laid. Then it sat there doing nothing until Zechariah and Haggai began to preach several years later. And it wasn't finished until over here. And the year that they finished it was in the year 515 that they finished it. So it was quite a few years later. They started in 535, so 20 years later they finished the temple. But it just sat nothing for 20 years. And then it was after that that other things take place. Ezra comes back way over here in 458. Nehemiah comes way over here in 445. So all of them kind of fit together in our Bible, and they seem like they're one right after another. It was quite a few years in between there. But it's good for us to see that. And in the midst of this, during the time when Ezra and Nehemiah were struggling here with the building of the city walls, it was during that time that there was opposition again. And here in Ezra chapter 4, Ezra, through the inspiration of the Spirit of God, includes verses 6 through verse 23 that isn't even about the temple at all. It's about the building of the city, way down here. So it's way down. So he wrote it way past all this stuff. So it's way down here in the building of the city, because he's talking about Artaxerxes. He wasn't even king back in this days. This is when Darius was the king, and Cyrus and Darius was king here, but way down here was Artaxerxes. So as you read those verses, we're not going to go through all of those tonight, but I just point that out from verse 6 to verse 23 of chapter 4 is looking ahead. It's talking about the other kinds of opposition that they faced. And so it's in there for kind of support material to build his case to help us to see that there was opposition that hindered the work. You know, in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verse number 14, the Apostle Paul tells us that the devil has the ability to transform himself into an angel of light. And he poses as something that is good when he is extremely evil. He's called the accuser of the brethren in Revelation 12, verse 10. The deceiver, Revelation 12, verse 9. The father of lies, John chapter 8 and verse 44. And a roaring lion, 1 Peter 5, 8. He has scores of tricks that he uses against God's people. And here in this chapter, we're going to see that the adversaries working for the devil were trying to hinder, and they succeeded. That's the sad part. The very last verse of the chapter tells us the work ceased of the house of God, which is in Jerusalem. So it ceased until the second year of the reign of Darius, king of Persia. Right? So there's 20 years there that it ceased. They didn't do any work on it for all those years. And it was because of the opposition. Now, God doesn't want us to crumble and cave in when there's opposition. But we all face opposition. It comes from all different kinds of things. And we're going to see that tonight as we work our way through here. So the devil uses the same kind of methods that he used against these people, he uses against us. And I want to notice four different methods that he uses here that can help us to understand this. First of all, we see that he used infiltration. Infiltration. What do I mean by infiltration? Well, infiltration, probably one of the best ways to explain this is the job of a secret agent. You know, you watch a detective show and there's a secret agent. He's infiltrating the enemy's territory. I would not want that job. Talk about a job that would give you nervous breakdown. I mean, a secret agent pretends that he's somebody he's not. And he's got to watch every word he says. He can't make one flaw because one mistake could cost him his life. He has to pretend that he's somebody else and try to sneak in, befriend the enemy, try to find out their secrets, and then get out of there and tell the secrets to his side without getting caught. That's infiltrating. And these people were using infiltration. Verse number 1, it says, "Now the adversaries of Judah and Benjamin heard that the children of the captivity builded the temple unto the Lord God of Israel. Then they came to Zerubbabel and to the chief of the fathers and said unto them, Let us build with you, for we seek your God as ye do. And we do sacrifice unto him since the days of Esarhaddon, the king of Asher, which brought us up hither." All right, so they come to him, and God tells us in the very first verse, or Ezra does, through God has Ezra tell us, in the very first verse, these are adversaries. Now, an adversary is an enemy. And so these adversaries were opposing, but they were pretending to be friends. They were infiltrating. They were pretending to be friends in order to be able to act harmless, like they weren't going to hurt anybody. We're just one of you. We're one of your friends. We want to work with you. We want to help you build the temple. And on the surface, that sounded like a nice thing. Oh, isn't it nice? You know, these neighbors are wanting to help us build the temple. We could use a hand. That'd be a good thing. And you know, there was probably a temptation. There may have even been some of the people that heard that that said, oh, come on, leaders, you know, Zerubbabel and Jeshua, come on, let them join us. I mean, they're good people. You know, they'll help us. We need some more people to help us. I mean, this is a lot of work to move all these stones and all this stuff and get this all ready. We can use some extra work. And so maybe somebody even tried to encourage that. But Jeshua and Zerubbabel were wise in discerning. In verse number 3, it says, "And Zerubbabel and Jeshua and the rest of the chief of the fathers of Israel said unto them, Ye have nothing to do with us to build the house of our God, unto our God. But we ourselves together will build unto the Lord God of Israel, as King Cyrus, king of Persia, hath commanded us." Alright, so these people came, tried to infiltrate. They tried to get in. They tried to be friends. They tried to pretend that they were on their side, and they really weren't. And that's one of the ways that the devil does this. And yet it was these leaders boldly separated themselves from these deceitful unbelievers. You know, separation is never easy. You know, if there's one doctrine that God has given to us as Christians, it's the doctrine of separation, and that's a tough doctrine. It's a tough one, because it's not easy to separate, especially when people seem to be harmless. You know, there's sometimes when God says, I want you to separate from them, and you think, but they seem so harmless. They don't seem like they're bad people. They seem to be pretty nice people. But God said, no, I want you to separate from them. Remember, throughout the Old Testament, many times while the people were conquering the land, God told them, do not make leagues with the people. Do not make friends with them. Do not marry their daughters. And do not allow their sons to intermarriage with you. Do not do that. God said, if you do, it will tear you down. It will break down your barriers. And you will end up worshiping their idols and falling away from God. Now, did the people listen to God and obey Him? No, they didn't. The whole book of Judges, time and time again, they didn't do it, they didn't do it, they didn't do what God told them to do. And as a result, the enemies come in, they start worshiping their false gods, and God sends down judgment on them. And then they cry out to God, and they say, oh God, have mercy on us. And God said, listen, I told you not to do that. And if you want help, go cry to your own gods. They said, oh God, please, we were wrong, please. And God felt sorry for them and had pity on them, and He'd send a judge, and He'd get them out of trouble, and they'd do good for a little while, and as soon as that judge died, right back into it again. And the same cycle went over, and again, we see that cycle repeat again and again in the book of Judges. And this is typical of people. And, you know, we can quickly condemn them, but truth of the matter is sometimes we fall into the same trap. So we need to be very careful. We need to beware of infiltration. Unbelieving relatives and colleagues may try to get us to do things we shouldn't do. You know, that's hard. The relatives say, come on, we're going to have this party. And you think, I know what kind of party that's going to be. I don't want to go to that party. Oh, come on, come on. It won't hurt you any. Come on to our party. You know, and taking a stand is not easy. It's not easy to take a stand in those situations. But you remember the old principle there that one bad apple spoils a whole basket full of apples. And you go to something you know you shouldn't go to, or you listen to something you know you shouldn't listen to, and you don't take a stand and say, no, I'm not going to do that, and it can harm you, it can hurt you. And so we need to be very careful about that. Proverbs chapter 14, verse 7 says, go from the presence of a foolish man when thou perceivest not in him the lips of knowledge. Go from him if you know he's not being wise. Then foolish friends can also corrupt us. 1 Corinthians 15, verse 33 says, be not deceived. Evil communication corrupt good manners. They spoil us. Worldly friends can pull us down. Proverbs 13, verse 20. He that walketh as a wise man shall be is wise, but a companion of fools shall be destroyed. You hang around fools, they're going to destroy you. Spiritually weak friends will pressure us to compromise. You know, a friend that does not sharpen us is dulling us. It's important for us to remember that. God says in Proverbs chapter 27, verse 17, iron sharpeneth iron, so a man sharpeneth the countenance of his friend. So each of us are to be like a file to sharpen each other. I am supposed to sharpen your life. When I'm around you, my testimony around you is supposed to sharpen you and make you a sharper Christian. Whenever you're around me, you're supposed to sharpen me and make me a sharper Christian. We're supposed to do that with each other. But you get around somebody that actually doesn't sharpen you, every time you get around them, you kind of take a step backwards spiritually. And you start feeling a little carnal, or maybe a little dirty, or a little corrupted. They're dulling you. They're not helping you. And those are the kind of people that God says we need to stay away from. Doctrinally erring friends will try to get you to doubt what you believe. They're dangerous people. That's why in Romans chapter 16, verse 17, the Apostle Paul, he came down hard on these people and he says, now I beseech you, brethren, mark them which cause divisions and offenses contrary to the doctrine which you've learned and avoid them. He said, if there's people that are teaching things that are not what you know the Bible teaches, you need to avoid them. That's so hard. Especially if it's a friend or a relative or somebody you work with. You just have to sometimes be blunt in a kind way and say, you know, listen, you and I don't agree on this issue, and I'm not going to change and you're not going to change, so let's just not talk about that issue. And if you continue to talk about that issue, then I'll just have to find somebody else to hang around with. And that's hard, but we need to do it for our own protection. So we need to beware of infiltration. Be wise, don't compromise. One commentator made this statement. He says, the Christian is not to be discourteous or detached from unbelievers. Rather, he is to befriend them to gain an opening to present the gospel. But he ought never to keep their friendship by compromising his convictions. You never keep a friendship by compromising your convictions. We need to beware of infiltration. So the first way is infiltration. The second method that these adversaries used was pessimism. Pessimism. When we talk about pessimism, pessimism is that feeling that things will just turn out bad. Say, oh, it's never going to work. It's going to be bad. It's bad. Oh, it's bad. It's bad, bad. So pessimism. Notice here what they do next. Verse number 4. And the people of the land weakened the hands of the people of Judah. They weakened their hands. The ones that weakened, the word weakened there literally means to dishearten, to make lax or weak, or to discourage. So the people of the land were discouraging the people of Israel. They were making them sad and discouraged, they're trying to just defeat them. But it says there that they weakened their hands for the work. Okay? They weakened their hands in the building. All right? And they troubled them in the building. So it was in the building they were discouraging and weakening their hands in this. And so to weaken their hands, you think about weakening their hands. What were they doing? They were building. They were using their hands. So in a sense, it was literal. They were weakening the hands of the people because the hands of the people were what were going to be doing the work. You know, they may have said things like, "It won't work. You can't do it. You're not able. It's too hard. You're too weak." And you know, there was probably a lot of those Jewish people that felt that way. We talked last week about moving those gigantic stones. And some of those people probably said, "We can't do it. It's too hard." And then the enemy comes along and said, "You can't do that." And they're saying, "Oh, maybe they're right. This looks like a very hard job. How are we going to move this big stone from all the way over there? And, oh, it's so heavy." And get it right exactly in place. And they weakened their hands and discouraged the people. Maybe weakening them through interruptions. You know, that's one of the things that's hard. You know, you're in the middle of your studies or you're in the middle of doing something and somebody interrupts you. It's like, "I'm never going to get done if I keep getting interrupted." And we feel that way sometimes. Interruptions can discourage us. It may have been that they were laughing at him or mocking him or calling him names. There's all kinds of things that people can do to discourage us. And the devil loves to discourage you and me as well. And even when it seems that the weeds of trouble are growing faster than the flowers of blessing, God is still on the throne. Now stop and think about that. There's times in our life when it seems like the weeds are growing much faster than the flowers are. But God's still on the throne. God doesn't make any mistakes. We've got to remember that. And it's hard. It's hard when we see the issues and problems troubling all around us. And the enemy's trying to discourage us. But we must not let the devil's pessimism get us down. Isaiah 26:3, that verse that we memorized many months back. Remember? "Thou wilt keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on thee, because he trusteth in thee." Alright? So God says, "I want you to trust me and keep your mind on me." We must need to keep our eyes on the Lord. So they used, first of all, they used the tool of the method of infiltration. Secondly, they used pessimism. Number three, they used terrorism. It says here that they troubled the people. All right, they weakened their hands and troubled them. The word "troubled" there means to terrify. They troubled the people. They terrified them. They caused them to fear. They troubled them in building. How did they do this? I don't know. He doesn't tell us exactly. It could be that they were saying, just like the examples that Ezra gives us here of the later on during Nehemiah's time, they wrote letters. Remember, during Nehemiah's time, they wrote letters back to the king and said, "Hey, king, they're doing this and they're being rebellious and it's causing all these problems and you need to check on these things and stop them because they're going to rebel against you." It could be that they threatened, even in this time, they may have said, "Listen, if you don't stop this building, we're going to contact the Persians and let them know what you're doing." And they think, "Well, the Persians sent us over here to do this." "Yes, but we're going to tell them what you're doing. We're going to report." And they may have gotten panicky and feeling like, "Oh, we might get ourselves in trouble." So, but they used terrorism to trouble them. It could be also, remember the people when they went back into the land. So they traveled all the way across from Babylon all the way back to Israel. And when they got back there, they started settling into their homes. They had to build homes. They didn't have any place to live, so they had to build homes and get that settled. Plus, it was that 6 months or so where they were gathering materials for the temple. They were getting things ready. So there's all this stuff going on. But a lot of the people were living throughout the land. They had gone back to their homesteads. And I'm from Bethlehem, and he's from Hebron, and he's from someplace else. And they're all going back to their own place, and they're building their little houses and getting things established and getting their little farm ready. And they get some sheep and things of that nature and get things settled. And then when they came to build the temple, probably, I can't be sure, but probably a lot of the family stayed back home and tended their little homestead that they had, and the husbands came to do the work. Very likely. And so the enemy may have been even threatened like that. "Well, we're going to go harass your family. If you don't straighten up here, you don't stop this work, we're going to give them a hard time. We're going to go rob what you have. There's all kinds of ways that they could have troubled and terrified the people. And the devil seeks to trouble you and me as well. You know, fear can paralyze us and keep us from serving God. I've been through that. Perhaps you have too. Where something happens and you just think, oh, what am I going to do now? And you just kind of freeze. And you can't serve the Lord like you should because we are paralyzed with fear. And one of the strongest defenses against fear is a flourishing relationship with God. We often underestimate the person and power of our God. We've got to know God. And folks, I'm not harping on you. I'm preaching to myself. I need to know God better. And it's not just a matter of knowing information about God. When we have our quiz time, we have lots of information about God in the Bible. And that's good. That's good for us to have information. But we need to have a relationship. We need to see God as a real being who is powerful and mighty and loving and compassionate and caring, that we can trust and we can depend upon, who's not going to fail us, who's not going to let us down, who's not going to let us go. He said that He would love us, and there's nothing would separate us from the love of God. Nothing. Nothing. So we need to remember those kind of things when the devil's trying to attack us and get us down. There in Romans chapter 8 and verse 31, what shall we say then of these things? If God be for us, who can be against us? There's nobody greater than God. Remember the psalmist said in Psalm 56:3, what time I'm afraid, I will trust in thee. And that's what we need. We need to trust in the Lord during those times. That needs to be our motto, to trust in the Lord. So they terrorize the people. Then finally, I find here that their fourth method was division. So they started out with the infiltration, then they used pessimism, then they used terrorism, and then they used division. Verse number 5 says, and hired counselors against them to frustrate their purpose. All the days of Cyrus, king of Persia, even until the reign of Darius, the king of Persia. Now that's significant. All right? So they hired counselors against them. Counselors are advisors. They may have been men who claim to know how to do the job better than them. It may have been men that are coming along and say, you know, listen, you're not doing this right. This is never going to work. You're never going to be able to get those stones up on top of here. I'll tell you the right way to do it. This is the right way to do it. These are counselors that are lying to them. They're deceiving them. They're trying to trick them, to try to lead them astray. They were counseling them to stop, counseling them to do something else. They're counseling them against the things of God in order to frustrate the purpose that God has given them to do. You know, when we think about frustrate, the word frustrate means to divide, to break, or to split. He was trying to split them up. He was trying to keep them from being unified. And you know, the devil wants to hinder our unity. He wants to break the unity in our families. He wants to break the unity in our church. He wants to break the unity in our country. You know, we need unity in order to stand strong. And these people were trying to frustrate or divide or to break or to split up the unity of the people. They sought to frustrate their purpose. And the word purpose there means their plan. What was the plan they were doing? They had a plan that God had given to them to rebuild that temple. And somebody amongst them, I have no idea who, but anytime you build a building, somebody's got to be the architect that draws it all up. Somebody had sat down, probably one of those old fellas that had been dreaming and praying and thinking about this for a long time. He probably, God had him sit down and draw out the plans in his mind for the temple. Maybe remembering the way it was before, and he drew it all out. They had it, they knew the dimensions they were going to do. They had the height. They had all that they needed. So they had a plan to follow. And then these people were trying to frustrate their plans. These counselors, these advisors, these people that are just giving them a hard time and lying to them and deceiving them, trying to lead them in the wrong way. They may have encouraged by bad advice. They may have tried to discourage them through rebellion and discord, trying to get the people to fight against each other. You know, there's nothing that will break a unity more than arguments and fights. The devil seeks to frustrate you and me as well. And He does not want us to live for the Lord and to serve Him. There's an old saying that is very true. United we stand, divided we fall. United we stand, divided we fall. And that is true in all of our relationships. In our marriages, in our homes, our families, in our church, in our nation, in our community. United we stand, divided we fall. And we need to stand together and do right and be on the right side of things. But we see, especially in our nation and our world, so many people are turning away from what's right. They're turning to things that are wrong. And it's dividing our nations. There's all this issue right now over Israel. Are we going to side with Israel or side against Israel? Even in Australia, they were dealing with some things even yesterday, today, or tomorrow. They're dealing with some major decisions as to whether they're going to side with or against Israel. That's significant. We need to be unified around what is right, not around what is wrong. And there's a lot of issues in our whole world like this, where there's conflict and problems, but unity is what we need. And this is true in our relationship with God as well. And at Philippians chapter 2 and verse number 3 says that let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind let each esteem other better than themselves. That goes against our nature. But God says, I want each of you to put others first. Think of others first. And our temptation is to think of ourselves first. But I want it this way. I don't care what anybody else wants. I want it this way. And that gets us into trouble every time. And as I pointed out earlier in the message, the last verse of the chapter lets us know that the opposition defeated them. They succeeded. Then ceased the work of the house of God, which is in Jerusalem. So it ceased unto the second year of the reign of Darius, the king of Persia. What a tragedy. What a tragedy. They stopped the work. So from verse 5, as I pointed out earlier, verses 6 all the way to verse 23 is that parentheses that he uses things of the future, where he talks about Artaxerxes and Ahasuerus. Ahasuerus was during the reign of Esther, and then Artaxerxes was the next king after him. So all of those are, you know, way down in this area. You know, so these are future things for what he's dealing with here, but he's using them. Evidently, Ezra didn't write this until, you know, more of the time that he did his teaching over here is probably when he wrote this book and recorded the information here. Because Ezra is not actually involved in this part of it right here. So he's later on, he's looking back at what took place of what Zerubbabel and Jeshua did and all these things. And so he's looking back on that and recording the history. But he includes this other stuff in there to help us to see this is nothing new. It continues to happen. And we see this in our own lives as well. The devil continues to attack and hurt and harm. And, you know, we need to be doing what is right and pleasing the Lord. You know, an old preacher years and years ago used to thunder this statement. He says, do right till the stars fall. Do right till the stars fall. Now, that's a good reminder to us. We need to do right. And there's all kinds of opposition, all kinds of discouragement and things that can hinder us. But God said, I want you to do right. Do right till the stars fall. And the stars aren't going to fall until God comes back and destroys everything all one day, way, way, way in the future. He says, do right till the stars fall. Good advice. We need to do what is right. Now, one author that I was reading, he said, made this statement here that it is so true, and it's a kind of a scary one. He says, faith that cannot be tested cannot be trusted. Faith that cannot be tested cannot be trusted. What he's meaning by that is, if your faith doesn't stand up to a test, you can't trust your faith. You need stronger faith. And Jesus said that we don't have to have great faith, just faith as a grain of mustard seed, but we struggle with faith. We struggle with faith. Faith in our God. So the bottom line is we need to have a strong faith in our great God. The devil opposes our work, and when he does, he'll do it through infiltration, through pessimism, through terrorism, and through division. When he does that, how are we going to stand? How are we going to respond? Will you cave in and quit like the temple builders did? Or will you stand fast, be steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord? We've got to make a choice. And the thing that will influence our choice is the greatness of our God. How great is our God? We need a great God. And I'm not suggesting that our God is sometimes great and sometimes he's not. But our opinion of God, our understanding of God, makes the difference. And when we don't have a great opinion of God, you know, just this morning I was reading, I think it was this morning, about the healing of blind Bartimaeus. And Bartimaeus was a blind man outside of Jericho, and he heard that Jesus was coming. And he called out, "Jesus, the Son of David, have mercy on me." The people said, "Be quiet, Bart, be quiet." "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." "Be quiet, you're interrupting things. We're trying to hear what Jesus is saying." And he kept hollering, and they kept telling him to be quiet. Finally, Jesus said, "Call him to me." And he says, "What would you like me to do?" He says, "I want my sight back." And Jesus said, yeah, I don't remember the exact words, but he said, "Your sight is restored because of your faith." And I thought, his faith. He believed in Jesus so firmly that he kept crying out, even though everybody told him to be quiet. "You're interrupting, you're making troubles, you're making noise, be quiet." And he said, "No, I'm not going to be quiet. I believe Jesus can heal me, and I know I'm going to keep crying until he does." He had great faith. And folks, we need greater faith in our great God. And so when the opposition comes, they try to hinder us, try to get us to stumble and fall, try to get us to cave in, give us a hard time, we get discouraged. They're going to use infiltration. They're going to use pessimism. They're going to use terrorism. They're going to use division to try to get us to cave in. We need to stand strong and say, "No, I'm going to stand steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of my God." Let's stand strong.